and welcome to the Mancunian Candidates here on Fab Radio International and YouTube. My name's Paul Ripley, and
I'm Mike Royce, and it's been a very interesting week. We are hosting Donald Trump's going away do later on, and we're going to start by having a look at what's going on in the UK and talking about lots of other stuff, aren't we?
Lots of other stuff. But we've got to make an apology, I suppose, but you'll understand why when I say this. We've concentrated on the American situation more so than ever in the last few months, for obvious reasons, and tonight will probably be the end of that, where we've been more balanced in stuff that's going on in the UK. We've ignored some of that, while the American situation, and it has been a situation to say the least, has been going on. But we'll be going back to lots of UK stuff and a balance from next week, I suppose, is a better way of saying it. But here, some news, some late breaking news I've just heard, is that there's been an outbreak in Scotland at an old person's home, where they've only had one injection. So the idea of we could just inject people once and it will contain this virus isn't really working, because there's been an outbreak, staff have got it, people are ill. These details are coming through all the time.
We need to be careful with how we receive this information. Yeah. We need more information. I don't want to start on this show panicking people into thinking that the virus, and unless you've had both doses, it doesn't work. I'm sure that there is some protection from having one dose, but you've got to look at the way that these tests were conducted. The vaccines were tested with two doses. Those results of 90-odd percent were with two doses, not with one. And there is, have you heard that there are other countries that are coming back and saying that the result after only one dose of the Moderna vaccine is only 38%. So it's important.
So it's a mixture. So that'll be carried on after the break. But the news I want to talk about before we start the show is, for people who know me, I'm a big fan of the music scene. I've been involved with the music scene for many, many years over my lifetime here in Manchester. And the Brexit situation is going to destroy, as at the moment, unless things change, the touring live scene for UK bands, because of this reason. To go and tour, and don't forget, you don't make money anymore from sales. I mean, someone was telling me the other day they had something like a million streams on Spotify, and they got some like 30 odd quid. But, so they make money touring. But to go into Europe now, it's an absolute nightmare. You need certain permits. You need certain, I've got in fact visas for each country you go into. But the permits for every instrument range from 350 quid. Also, adding to that, if you've got a guitar, I mean, lots of people have certain age guitars, certain rosewood maybe on that instrument, you cannot enter that country with that guitar because of the wood that's been on the instrument. Did you know that, Mike?
No, I didn't.
So it doesn't make sense. Oh,
it does with the constrictions that we were expecting. It makes sense that there'd be lots of different rules. I mean, if you go back to something,
even on the world of classical music, certain violins won't hit that criteria. And you've got to, on this one, have every single piece of equipment that's going to be taken abroad has to be identified and a sheet made, and it's going to be signed off. So that includes little things like, say, that size to great big speakers. There's thousands and thousands of bits of kit required to go on tour. It's going to destroy one of the greatest industries this country has ever produced, which is the music scene. You just look at it. Over the years, the people that's been generated, the music's been generated from here, across America, across the world, and it's going to be destroyed because of Brexit.
There is no thought gone into many aspects of this. This is one of these areas, and there are other grey areas. in this, and I'm not, we'll get back to, obviously the music scene is important to me. I've got a live music venue that's remaining, it's shut now, and I want to reopen it, but what am I going to reopen? Am I going to reopen it? Are they going to be bands able to perform? Are they still going to be people?
You must have had so many bands from around Europe playing at your venues.
And loads of them, absolutely.
What makes me laugh though is Roger Daltrey, who's a big Brigadier.
Yes.
A couple of years ago, he's been on, oh, we don't need control like this. Get rid of this Gestapo type thing in Europe. He changed his mind now.
Yeah, of course he's changed his mind. Yeah, as have many people in the UK who this week started to get parcels that they'd ordered off Amazon and eBay and various other places and have suddenly ended up with an £80 fee or higher on items that probably cost less than that to buy.
Yeah.
The duties that are being imposed at this end now, because they have to recoup the costs of entry into our country that's not part of the EU, are now going off the scale. So that little DVD that you'd buy that was only you got from Germany, and now you paid 20 quid for, probably cost £2 postage. Your postman's there knocking you up at 8:30 in the morning and he's saying, oh, I want 40 quid on top. So the DVD, this Blu-ray is costing you 60 quid, and the same goes for music and imported music and all the rest of it. That is the tip of the iceberg, and this music situation that Paul's actually going on about here is it's yet to get as bad as it's going to get. This is going to get worse.
Absolutely. We give a prime example is a girl bought a coat. Yeah, a coat off Amazon, but the supplier was in France. £280. So you paid £200. Like you said, knock on the door. Postman, £80, please.
So what you've got now in all the private vendors that use Amazon, 95% of them this week have decided not to supply to the UK. So all of those places that you were buying stuff from all over Europe now, 95% of the vendors that are not, that, as you know, Amazon sell its own stock, and Amazon also have lots of wonderful independent companies that provide services, and they use Amazon as a go-to. And they are not shipping now to the UK because they cannot find a way of making it cost-effective with all the fees.
And just one more thing to add on the music scene situation is, you think about a band going on tour. Well, it's not just a band that's involved. Say a band's got four or five members. It's all the team around them, the roadies, the support staff, the mixers, the engineers, the lighting engineers. Every single one of them has to have a permit and a visa for each country. And you can only do a maximum of 90 days and three countries. It's knackered.
Yeah.
Knackered. But before we go on, I've got to reply to a few things. Eddie, who was in touch with us last week, one of the early candidates, I would say.
Yes.
He sends us a message, and Eddie will be appearing for Friends of Eddie. Eddie Sheehy, he sent us a message the other week, which you got to reply for. I'm always just seeing it now. What does his message say, Chris?
It says, "You are buffering, and it shouldn't be anything at my end."
You are buffering and it shouldn't be anything.
I take it you're going to deal with this.
Well, Eddie, it doesn't quite work that way. It is at your end. It is your internet or it is your computer.
You can't buffer at the other end, as they say, and that's not a euphemism.
Now, I asked to add this. I mean, I'm not going to show him up. He'll laugh about it, but Eddie used to teach computers at the university. He teaches about computers. He comes up with messages like that. Eddie, you're a star. You're in Ireland, you'll be back soon. Hope to see you, and we'll hopefully get you on the show in the next couple of weeks. But my goodness, don't send me emails like that. You are showing something, your capabilities are about the internet.
And I'd like to say thank you. We've had a few bits and bobs, but the one that got me, somebody spent the time, was a bit offended by the Trump impeachment section on last week's show, and he found me on Twitter to give me a bit of grief. And inform me that I'm an Eskimo-faced cunt. I don't know what I say to that. It's a new one. And thank you very much. I'm impressed with the amount of effort you put in to deliver it that piece of information.
What does an Eskimo face
what
look like?
What I don't know. I don't think I look like an Eskimo. but it's not something I've ever really given much consideration to until this week. This show is just grabbing the crazy from out of nowhere, isn't it? You know,
can I call you that in the future?
No, you can't call me that in the future. It annoyed me that much. I blocked him, and I was in the middle of getting ready. Well, I didn't think, did I? I'm not having an argument over why I don't look like an Eskimo. You know, can you imagine that?
Perhaps it's the hair.
No, it's not the hair. They don't have hair like this. I don't have a clue. I will find out what it means at some point.
Later in the show, we are joining Joe from New York, from Queens in New York. And because while this change has been going on, the handing over of power, certain things have been going on in New York which you need to be aware of, and Joe will bring that to our attention. But the UK was relieved, apparently. All our press was relieved that we had finally got rid of a certain president. And the headlines from the newspapers showed this. If you could show some clips.
The Daily Star was a cracker.
Yeah, so we'll just show you a few headlines from what was going on in the last couple of days. And I actually laughed out loud while these were being shown. The Daily Star one.
The Daily Star was amazing because of the expression on Trump's face and the fire and the fury, and, well, that was a weird dream. That's a great one. If we can find the Metro... I really appreciated the graphic design elements on that one because of the use of the flag, the bit of space there, and the fact that Biden arriving was so insignificant compared to the big thing they wanted to get into, which was him going.
Yeah.
And then we got into Biden blitzing Trump's legacy, which was a nice cover, because it turns out that he certainly is. I mean, later on in the show, we'll be going through some of the things since Trump's gone. He's sort of hit the ground running, to be honest, which is great. And then finally, we've got McConnell, who we'll be dealing with later, who's blaming Trump now for the events, openly blaming Trump, which is what we wanted, because that does mean that a certain impeachment might go the right way.
And don't forget, Boris and May, when she went over to America, tied themselves hoping for this deal, that this great deal will leave the EU, and we'll see how that turns out over the next few months. If it's anything to do, turn into something like the music business nonsense, it should be quite well. I mean, in Northern Ireland, apparently certain stores ran out of food, fresh foods. I can see us.
We're just at the beginning. We're just at the beginning. And can I say, when we've been for years on the show prophesying massive increases in imported goods, massive increases in things you're buying from the EU, all the things that we were talking about, it isn't a told you so. It's just, it isn't surprising to us on the Mancunian candidates that this has turned out to be the case. It wasn't Project Fear, it was Project Fact. And also, Project Fact. Well, you've got to remember some prophecies that we made heading into Christmas, where I said that Christmas was not going to be great. I put it in more colourful terms than that, if I remember. And it turns out that on Tuesday we hit a particular landmark.
Let's bring you more on the latest infection numbers and the number of people who've died of coronavirus in the UK in the last 24 hours. Emma Birchley is in the newsroom, has been having a look at the figures for us. Emma.
Yes, and the most shocking thing actually is the number of people who have died. So that figure has been put at 1,610. It's the highest number that we have seen throughout this pandemic in this country, and significantly higher than yesterday, where the figure was 599. A better comparison is actually to look week on week. So if we look at last Tuesday, the figure was 1,243, so an increase of not far off 400 on last week. Also, when we look at the number of people who have tested positive in the past 24 hours. That figure put at 33,355. Now, that's actually down on 37,500 yesterday and 12,000 down on this time last week, which is once again the much more useful comparison looking week on week. And that has to be a good sign, you would hope, because, of course, if you've got fewer people testing positive, that means fewer people ultimately ending up in hospital and very sadly then losing their lives. We have also the figure of how many people have had their first dose of the vaccination. So that's 4.27 million people, up from 4.06 million people yesterday. Actually, there's a slight slowing down in the rate that they appear to be vaccinating at the moment. We were seeing 300,000 a day. This is more like 200,000. But still, you know, this is an enormous task. But I think the headline of these really dreadful figures is that 1,610 people in these latest figures who've lost their lives within 28 days of a positive test.
Yeah, absolutely scary stuff, scary stuff. And they've got some figures here. At the moment, there's 38,676 people in hospital right now as we talk. And just before, literally, was it 1,290 deaths today. Unbelievable, unbelievable. And a guy who I know, I won't name and shame, but he's called Paul and lives in Drawsden, is on Facebook. They're going on, oh, I'm dreading this Gates needle that's going to go into me and turn me.
Yeah.
Oh, for God's sake.
Stupid bastard. I've literally no tolerance for this now. And I'll just say there is a graph that you can easily find online and it shows where we were at Christmas and then it shows when we went into lockdown. And as you know, the figures all lag by 2 to 3 weeks. And you can see the other countries in the EU that did not have the little kumbaya Christmas and decided to kill each other for Christmas. They actually just stayed at home, locked down, so that they didn't spread it, phoned the loved ones, told them they loved each other, did a bit of FaceTime and a Zoom meeting here and there, or a Zoom call, you know, throughout the day. And they are on a downward trajectory. And we reached on Tuesday the highest level of deaths since this entire saga began. You had 1,600 people dead there. You have got... everything is kicking in now from Christmas Day. That one day has now added weeks and weeks and weeks, and more importantly, thousands of dead people that didn't need to die just because you're a bunch of pussies that couldn't do without Christmas Day as you remember it. Well, do you know what? There's now going to be some people who won't be around for next Christmas Day because of you, you bunch of absolute bellends.
To me, Mike, it's always about who governs it, and to me, Boris Johnson's got blood on his hands.
Of course he has. He got rid of science. He ignored science to chase some mythical dream of a Christmas Day because he felt that politically he would do better if everybody was happy for that week and had the Christmas Day and all the rest of it. He didn't. And I'll just say this. You're seeing that figure there, 1,600 dead there. You're seeing all of this. Imagine if we'd have done the 5 days now. Imagine the carnage that we'd be going through now. I suggested that this would be a cauldron of death in January. Well, we're in the middle of the cauldron, and the person who put all the stuff into the pot is Boris Johnson. And talking of Boris Johnson, that mop-headed wanker was caught today leaving his house, and he was pressured on the question of when this lockdown will end.
Are we looking at summer rather than spring?
I think it's too early to say when we'll be able to lift some of the restrictions. We're looking at that February the 15th deadline, as you know, for the JCVI groups 1 to 4, the elderly, the vulnerable groups that we want to vaccinate first. At 15 million people across the UK that we want to have been offered a vaccination slot by the 15th of February. We'll look then at how we're doing. But I think what we're seeing in the ONS data, in the REACT survey, we're seeing the the contagiousness of the new variant that we saw arrive just before Christmas. There's no doubt it does spread very fast indeed. It's not more deadly, but it is much more contagious, and the numbers are very great. So, as we get the vaccination program out there, as we continue to expand, and I think we're up to 4.6 million people today, 5 million jabs, we've got to observe the lockdown, the stay-at-home message, protect each other, protect the NHS. That's absolutely crucial in what is unquestionably going to be a tough few weeks ahead.
Tough because you brought it on. Tough because you brought it on. And there he is smirking all over his face, doing all the usual stuff he does.
I don't understand it. And you know what? What's really quite bizarre is seeing him in a high-vis jacket, because you associate high-vis jacket with somebody who works hard, who does manual labour, who's quite a hard-working person. And it doesn't do him much favours. I mean, it doesn't suit him, does it? Let's just say that. And the other thing, he's not calling it a super strain anymore, is he? Remember that one, that little faux pas that turned us into a plague ship on the edge of Europe where no one wanted to come and visit or send any goods to, and gave us a lovely no-deal Brexit for a week for no reason whatsoever other than that he's stupid. Stupid.
I still can't get over people. And now we're going to talk about Trump, but Trump, Boris is our Trump. Simple as that. He's our Trump.
Oh, yeah.
But he is responsible. Trump and people jumping on this right wing thinking it's going to be the future is responsible for Brexit. End story. He's responsible for Brexit. The people that died into it, like the Americans, certain Americans jumped onto the Trump bandwagon. Certain people here, you would think normal people suddenly started believing that Boris and Brexit is the right way forward.
For the same reason that Europe have been proved right, because all the way through the 60s into the 1970s, we were shown by France. France didn't want us in. They vetoed us from joining Europe because they said we had a transatlantic notion. We were more interested in having a nuclear deterrent and being part of the nuclear club with America and being friends with them and dealing with them, and that we would eventually go back to being cosy with them, and we weren't natural Europeans. And you know what? We argued and went, of course not, and we've ended up proving them right. Congratulations, you bunch of bozos that voted for this.
But someone who's not a bozo, I've been told by Chris over there that we have to change things around slightly.
Right, okay, well, let's find out what Joe thinks about what's been going on with Trump. Trump's gone, let's deal with it.
In New York City.
Indeed.
Hi, guys.
Hey, hello, long time no talkie.
Yeah. Can you hear me all right?
Absolutely, Joe. Fantastic. Absolutely. Yeah. It's lovely to see you. So, what? You're having revolutions now. Well, we've been gone. What are you doing? Playing that?
The revolution, and while there's a great sense of relief to, enter this new chapter in the world, we've got a long way to go and a lot of work to do. Before I get into this, I would like to say there's great signs of hope for our future in the form of none other than Cesar Chavez himself is now sitting in the Oval Office in the form of a bust behind President Biden, which is very promising for anyone who is on the side of civil rights and labor rights.
It's very impressive, actually. I was looking at photographs of the Oval Office, and I do appreciate the civil rights presence in there. And I'm not at all offended that Conservative MP Winston Churchill has been removed.
I wasn't going to bring that up, but...
I'd have got rid of it ages ago.
But, Joe, I want to know what's going on in New York. There's a strike going on.
Yeah.
What's the reason behind the strike? What's the story?
Right. So here in New York City, as I'm sure you can imagine, getting goods and specifically food products into the city can be a challenging task. And we have something called the Hunts Point Market, which is in the Hunts Point neighborhood of the South Bronx. Over the weekend, workers from the produce section of that market decided to go on strike. They are currently in negotiations with the employer for a new contract. So this is the Teamsters Local 202 negotiating on behalf of the workers for a contract, and they are looking for a wage increase of $1 per hour. Now, to put things in perspective, these workers are making about, at most, $20 per hour.
Yeah.
These are essential workers who are tasked with unloading trucks filled with our food products, primarily produce, unloading train cars full of produce, sorting it and getting it out to the vendors, you know, loading it onto other trucks and getting it out to the city to feed the city. This market provides 50%
They're putting their lives on the line as well, aren't they? Because with the current situation, they might as well be doing a tour of duty in Iraq, because the chances of mortality are probably higher than that.
Exactly. In fact, numerous workers have given their lives to doing this job during this pandemic. I believe 6 workers have unfortunately passed away from the virus from work. Now, to put things in perspective, we're talking about an employer, Hunts Point Market, who has, I believe it's $60 billion in revenue. All right. And the workers, like I said, are looking for a $1 per hour raise. The market has offered them 32 cents an hour as an increase. So for all their thanks, these workers who live here in New York City, which is not a cheap city.
No, it isn't.
I don't care where you live, even if you're in the Bronx, in the South Bronx. $20 an hour translates into roughly $40,000 a year.
Yeah.
Try and support a family on $40,000 a year in New York City.
What would an average, say, 2-bedroom apartment cost you to rent per month or per year in New York, do you think? In a sort of average area, not really run down, just an average area.
Sure. Even just looking at the Bronx, I have numbers here for a 1-bedroom.
Yeah.
Average numbers currently at for a 1-bedroom, $1,800 a month.
Okay.
For a 3-bedroom apartment, $2,333 a month.
Okay, so you're talking about half your annual wage just on rent.
Yeah, and when you factor in other costs of living, it's we're talking about workers who are forced to rely on overtime and second and even third jobs, multi-income households, in order just to survive. Yeah. And many of these workers are people that, for whatever the reason might be, have no place else to go. So what many Americans enjoy, the freedom of movement, of saying, okay, I don't want to live in Dayton anymore. I'm going to take this job in Indianapolis. And they moved to Indianapolis because the cost of living is similar.
Yeah.
The culture is similar. We're talking about workers who are here in New York City. This is their home. This is where their families are.
Yeah.
Their brothers and sisters have literally given their lives to working during this pandemic.
Yeah.
And now they're on strike. And how does the city respond? Well, the good people of the NYPD, of course, showed up and decided to violently attack these lawful picketers.
Right.
And detain many of them, supposedly obstructing traffic and blocking a roadway.
Yeah. We had this here with the coal miners' strike in the 1980s. Thatcher wanted to break that union, and she used the police as a private army. Yeah.
Yes, and this is just one of another example of this, as you just mentioned, of civil servants, police officers, who are paid by my tax dollars and those workers' tax dollars being used as a military force course, on behalf of a company. They're protecting the rights of the workers who have a legal permit picketing, who have democratically an employer who's not taking care of them. And the police are using intimidation tactics, showing up with mounted officers and corralling the workers and, you know, detaining them and charging them with things that are just unequal. So, here in New York City, that's what's happened is our food supply cut off while an employer doesn't want to pay and take care of its workers, and the police are defending the employer.
And at the moment, the rioters from the Capitol riots that were all live streaming it and providing ironclad evidence of their guilt and their intent, and even making statements on social media, written statements about doing it, quite a lot of them are getting off with very, very, very low-level charges that don't point anywhere towards an armed insurrection.
Do you hope the situation in New York will change over the next year or so regarding the police and their policies? Because the support for Trump is obviously gone. So do you think it'll change in any way? Do you think there'll be sort of a retraining of the police?
I think we're going to see a lot of major changes. Currently, there is a lawsuit against the NYPD filed by the state of New York. Our attorney general has stepped in and filed a lawsuit against the NYPD as an organization for their mistreatment of Black Lives Matter protesters over the summer. Right now, we, to some extent, have highlighted issues within the department, within the NYPD, that they can no longer ignore. So you're seeing them forced into talking their way out of the corner at the moment. There's so much evidence of their mistreatment and mishandling of the citizens of this city, and they can't continue to hide behind the blue wall or blue curtain, whatever you want to call it, anymore. So I think we will see some major changes over the course of the next year. Whether or not those changes is a story, because we need to continue getting our politics on our side, getting our people on our side elected into office at a local level, and we need to continue building strength from the bottom up.
Joe, I'm sorry to interrupt you here, but the line is terrible, to be honest, and you keep cutting out. You're losing some of the important things you've got to say. So can we come back to you next week to catch up again, just to, because the line's too bad? Is that okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes.
Joe, we thank you so much from the bottom of our hearts for your contribution to the Mancunian candidates. You are a candidate and you're in New York, that's all, but really you're a Manc. We'll see you next week.
Take care.
Bye, guys.
Yeah, we're sorry about that there. The line was just cutting a bit.
It's normally better than that. But, you know, next week maybe we can pre-record that and get a bit more.
Well, I think it's just one of them days. I mean, what's going on in New York? Yeah. I mean, Joe, just for people who've never seen the show before, Joe talks about the funding behind the New York police and the certain elements of the New York Police Department, and how it's been bung money, simple as that, bung money from the Trump campaign, and it's having an effect, because police, we talked to Tom, Tom hopefully will be on the show next week as well. Tom is a Republican in Alaska, and you cannot mention the police to him because his dad was a former police officer of a high level, but the police in America need looking at, and they need to retrade and look at how they...
Tom will definitely give you a different version of events next week, but we'll, in the meantime, before that, we'll just deal with what's been going on. And obviously the big news that it's hopefully going to get us past covering this guy so much. And I've hated this for 4 years. Every week we used to write the show and have all sorts of varied topics, and this orange-faced monster has just came on the scene 4 years ago and has dominated in a negative way every single episode of this show. I've gone away from every episode where we've talked about him, all despondent, all fed up. It's going to be nice to cover some other topics, but we do have to deal with what has been a dramatic week.
And but it's not just him, is it, Mike? We covered it. I mean, I said it to you before. It's like a hydra. It's a family all around, and many heads, and they all need cutting off.
We're going to be dealing with all of that. Now, I mean, to start off with, the week began and people were nervous because of the riots and because of everything that's going on. Is Trump going to actually go, or is he going to pull some last minute trick? And then all of a sudden, a video emerged of the MyPillow guy paying him a visit.
The nation under siege. At this moment, the nation's capital turning into a fortress as more governors activate the National Guard in their states. Tonight, that number at 14, and it's growing. And it comes ahead of warnings of armed protests starting as early as this weekend. So what did the president of the United States, the leader of the country, do at this moment of need? He hung out with the MyPillow guy. Remember Mike Lindell? You know, known for pillows, known for telling the American public to take a plant extract that would end and cure coronavirus. Well, that's who he met with. And look what Lindell had on his notes as he met with Trump. A Washington Post photographer captured it. So hold it up here for a second. The document includes the words martial law, and since the Constitution, dangerous and fringe ideas still making their way inside the White House. So now, because, you know, we saw Mike Lindell and we saw the paper, we all now know what the president's public schedule actually meant in practice. It read, President Trump will work from early in the morning until late in the evening. He will make many calls and have many meetings. Well, we know of one meeting with the pillow guy who came equipped with notes about martial law.
There you go. I mean, he at the very tail end, even after you've had that insurrection, after you've had all this, the guy's impeached. You think, well, surely now he can bunker down just for the final week and not cause any controversy. And you'd think that there were some people around him, maybe his family, his core, because he was being abandoned left, right and centre. By all reports, it sounded very much like Nixon, who was spent the last week before he resigned, knowing he was going to resign, talking, pissed up, wandering the halls of the White House, talking to the ex-president's pictures, and in particular had a weird relationship with JFK's portrait, who he was arguing with, saying, well, you had it easier than me, didn't you, Jack? You know, it's odd. Trump, unfortunately, doesn't drink. Well, or fortunately, can you imagine if he was a bit of a pisshead, what how many problems we'd have had? And he still took this meeting with this lunatic. The MyPillow guy, if you're in America at any time, the MyPillow is this amazing pillow that's supposed to help you sleep, make you not snore, make you a virile human being. It's got lots of imagery of guys waking up all virile, looking like they're going to give the wife a good seeing to.
And Fox News promoted it to death.
And Fox News promoted it, and they advertised all over it. And this guy, he's one of these guys, if I say this, where, you know, when you get a product and the owner of the company, even though he's not dynamic, even though he's not handsome, even though he really shouldn't be in front of the camera, insists on promoting.
Is it like that double glazing guy that
yes,
we have locally
right
here?
Ted Malt, yeah.
And he just couldn't act.
Yeah, hung himself.
Did he?
Oh, shot himself. Oh, right. He took a shotgun and blew his head off. His son still looks after it. It's Everest double glazing. Mm. It's a cracking little story. I didn't think he'd shoot himself. He was really depressed. Apparently, it's a bit of a downer putting windows in. So, yeah, the guy turns up. This guy is a Trump fan. He's a sycophant. He's been hanging around Trump from day one. He's got plenty of money from selling these pillows, so there's something to think about if you want another career change. And he has wanted him to take over the country. He's literally been telling Donald Trump that, I know you lost the election, but you've got the army, you've still got power. You might as well just tell the army to take over all 50 states, and then you can remain in charge forever. And this meeting, as you've seen, this is the problem. These people who are having meetings, you get a lot of Tory MPs slipping up like this, or do they? Are they doing it on purpose? Where they're captured with notes and they say stuff like, I am going to say this in the meeting, and it's like top secret stuff. And he went there and he had a chat with him about how to bring in martial law and get the army to take over the country and install him as a dictator. Wow. On the run up to him leaving,
And apparently he was complained about Parler as well. Parler, the app, the social media app, which got taken down by Amazon because they hosted it. Guess who else was on Parler, by the way?
I don't know. Go on.
Michael Gove.
Oh, is he really?
And six other.
Is he really?
Six other backbenchers.
This is
the right wing little chat room.
Wonderful.
Where they all come together and.
Yeah. And the right wing. What can I say? So we have got, because of the riots and the issues that arose over the last 2 weeks that we've covered copiously on here, it turns out, did you know that there was an impeachment about to begin?
Well, I do, because you told me about an hour ago.
Well, let's look at this. Somebody is about to be impeached.
And it's not who you think it is.
Welcome, Congresswoman. How do you feel about today, first of all?
Well, I'm absolutely disgusted with what happened today. What the Democrats are putting the American people through is atrocious. It's a waste of our taxpayer dollars. And they're pouring salt in the wounds of 75 million Americans who voted for President Trump. This is not why I wanted to come to Washington. I wanted to actually work on real problems. But it's apparent that we definitely have real problems now, Greg. And this is why I wanted to come on your show tonight. I'm tired of Republicans that lay down and allow this country to be ravaged, allow Democrats to abuse their power and their positions. And I believe it's time for Republicans to stand up for the American people and do a good job in Congress.
Very well. And yes, 10 or so Republicans did this as well. We'll have more on that in a bit. Congresswoman, I understand, though, you have something pressing, something important and something new you'd like to share with everybody.
Yes, I would like to announce on behalf of the American people, we have to make sure that our leaders are held accountable. We cannot have a president of the United States that is willing to abuse the power of the office of the presidency and be easily bought off by foreign governments, foreign Chinese or Chinese energy companies, Ukrainian energy companies. So on January 21st, I will be filing articles of impeachment on Joe Biden.
Wow. Articles of impeachment on Joe Biden on his first full day as president. I'm looking at Hunter Biden right now. So we're talking about Joe. Obviously, we know Hunter's got issues as well. How is that going to work? You are a freshman. You're in the minority. What will happen next? Is this symbolic or can you really do something about this?
Well, like I said, I'm a big believer in having people in office that are actually willing to do the job. And I can't imagine people in this country being so fearful of a future of a Biden presidency that they may be willing to commit violence like they did in the Capitol here in Washington, D.C. We cannot have that. I do not condone that violence. The American people need hope. They need to know that there are Republicans in Congress that are willing to stand up and fight for them, regardless of being in a minority, regardless of having all at odds against us, against me, or against anyone in Congress. We have to hold people accountable. Joe Biden is on record on the phone saying that he would withhold $1 billion of foreign aid if he didn't get his way with these deals with his son, Hunter. And there's an ongoing investigation with Hunter Biden's laptop into being bought and paid for by Chinese, communist Chinese energy companies. This is a dangerous threat to our country when we have a man that will be holding the power of the presidency, but will so easily and is on record for abusing power.
So I'm going to put it out there now. She is now. It used to be, I think, Sarah Palin in my book, but she's now got it. She's got the title of the most stupid person in American politics. She has got to be the most brainless moron I've ever seen elected to a high office. You guys in Georgia, you elected her. And you know she's batshit crazy. You know she's mad. You know she's QAnon. And you elected her. She's actually in there. There's two people in QAnon. that are Republican representatives in the House now. Two members, one of which, not her, the other one, I can't remember a bloody name off the top of my head, but the other one was live tweeting where Nancy Pelosi was when the riot was going on. These are enemies of the people. That woman is a certifiable lunatic.
This is a reason why America got in such a state. And it's a reason why the right wing in general, I mean the extreme right wing, I mean we should have a left and should have a right, we should have a middle, we should have a bit of sensible stuff and a bit of balance. But this is extremism.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about, you know, religion, Islam, and causing extremism within that, and Al-Qaeda and all the rest of it. This is the same. These are
no
nutters.
Different.
No difference.
It's no different at all. No
and
different.
I look at British politics as well. Yeah. And in British politics, if we had anyone like that, I know we got some nutters and we got some extreme nutters, but no one is stupid.
You don't go
as
deep down the rabbit hole as her. She does believe, she absolutely believes that there are pizza restaurants across the United States that are hiding kidnapped children underneath to be sold to Democratic members of the House. She believes that a lot of people that are involved in government, only Democrats though, not Republicans, which is weird because if you did a percentage of how many sexual deviants there were in the Republican Party to the Democrats, I'd say who do you think's hanging around with hookers most nights? And she believes that they are paedophiles that are trafficking in kids, in children that are held for them to buy underneath pizza restaurants across the United States.
Madness.
That woman believes that, and you voted in Georgia. Yeah, for our American viewers, when this all goes up and goes live throughout the week, and you all start watching it and sending me loads of crap about me looking like an Eskimo and stuff. Just remember, you voted for her.
You got some points there, Mike.
Yeah,
that's come up on our little YouTube channel.
Yeah.
You can read them out.
I am indeed. Nick is saying that to do with your music comments.
Oh, yeah.
Ringo Starr, Roger Daltrey, Morrissey. They were all on that side. So how was taking back control? Mark is saying 94,000 deaths now. Absolutely shocking and heartbreaking. And some people still question the whole thing. Yeah, getting on to these deniers. Robert Doyle saying it's shocking how many people have died over the past few weeks. The Christmas relaxation was a big mistake. It was hard, but we stayed at home. And I haven't seen my parents since last January. Well, good for you, Robert.
Yeah,
and so
well done,
did mate. I just spent it with a family and a good friend of mine. And he's saying they're having their first jab on Monday, your parents, so that'll be now. Well, let's hope you get to see them soon, Robert.
I'll make sure you have the second one.
Yeah, and Mark was actually pointing out before we aired that video about Marjorie Greene, Congresswoman, introducing the impeachment, and Nick is saying that Parler is up again on a Russian server.
Surprise.
It's returned from the dead.
It's up, but it's not quite up. I had a look before. But Trump has been pardoning people.
We were waiting with bated breath. The big one was, is he going to pardon the Tiger King? Because the Tiger King... No, it's true. The Tiger King, for those of you who've seen the Netflix documentary, that was the first week of lockdown in March last year, was all the Tiger King. That was all anyone was watching and talking about. And this guy has become sort of an absolute right-wing lunatic. And he ran for president himself. And then he didn't get anywhere, obviously.
Yeah.
And then he supported Trump like mad because he's very much like Trump. And he is now serving 22 years for trying to have in the most inept job I've ever seen, of hiring a hitman to do away with a rival of his who had a rival zoo, Carol Baskin.
Yeah.
And also he was done for executing some some tigers that had grown into beyond cubs and he could no longer afford to maintain. So he's not this the fun character that can be portrayed. He's in prison. He's not in prison by accident. There are a couple of issues there, although 22 years is a crazy long time for if you look at the internet. So his lawyers petitioned and went, oh, we believe Trump is going to come good for us. And they got a limo outside the prison, yeah, on the morning, waiting for Trump to issue his pardon. So let's have a look at who actually did get pardoned.
In his final hours in office, President Trump issuing a flurry of late-night pardons and commutations, including one for his former chief strategist, Steve Bannon, who helped Trump win the White House in 2016. Last year, Bannon pled guilty to charges he defrauded Trump supporters who donated millions to an online campaign called We Build the Wall. Bannon, among those accused of stoking the flames ahead of the Capitol riots, saying on his podcast the day before the attack, all hell will break loose tomorrow. All I can say is strap in. President Trump also pardoning rappers Lil Wayne and Kodak Black, who were prosecuted on federal weapons offenses, and former Detroit Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick, who was serving a 28-year prison term on corruption charges. Not on the list, Rudy Giuliani, Julian Assange, and Edward Snowden, or any members of the president's family, including President Trump himself. The outgoing president, not seen publicly in more than a week, releasing a video farewell address.
I took on the tough battles, the hardest fights, the most difficult choices, because that's what you elected me to do.
Arguing the movement he started is only beginning, the president, who's yet to congratulate President-elect Biden, never once mentioning him by name, offering these words for his successor.
We inaugurate a new administration and pray for its success in keeping America safe and prosperous.
President Trump also condemning this month's Capitol insurrection by his supporters without acknowledging he's been accused of inciting it.
Political violence is an attack on everything we cherish as Americans. It can never be tolerated.
Ahead of the president's impeachment trial, expected to begin within days, the Senate's top Republican, Mitch McConnell, who says he hasn't ruled out voting to convict President Trump, unequivocally denouncing him for his rhetoric before the riots.
The mob was fed lies. They were provoked by the president and other powerful people.
President Trump skipping time-honored transfer of power traditions, like welcoming the incoming president and first lady. Mr. Trump is instead eyeing a celebration of himself, departing the White House for the last time this morning, hours before Biden is sworn in, choreographing his send-off at Joint Base Andrews. The president said to have requested a red carpet, a color guard, even a 21-gun salute. But many top Republicans will not be there, including Vice President Mike Pence, who, unlike the president, will attend Biden's inauguration at the Capitol.
Okay, so Steve Bannon, let's just get into this. Not only is he the most disheveled human being ever, you think he'd look in the mirror and someone had something in his head would go, have a shave, sort your shirt out, just sort your hair out. The guy looks like a demented bagman, you know,
does
wandering
look
the streets.
Like an Eskimo?
Oh, get out. Are you going to leave that alone? Is that a thing now? You're going to be T-shirts, merch with that on?
Just a description again. Go on. Unshaven.
Disheveled. He said an Eskimo.
Sort your hair out.
You don't know why. Why is there a thing that Eskimos are scruffy?
But I didn't begin.
And I don't think I'm scruffy. I've tried my best. You
I
know.
Didn't begin.
Anyway, right. Back to this. Steve Bannon. Why was he up and why is this so bad what's happened? Obviously, they touched on it that he was raising funds for Trump's wall.
Yep.
And then it turned out that he had taken the money and not given it to the wall. So he basically collected loads of money from the public, hundreds and hundreds of millions, and then took the money. Well, here's what they've missed out there. He actually spent it on this, if Chris can find the picture. He decided that it would be a great idea to start a right-wing boot camp to produce future leaders that believe in taking down the New World Order. And he bought a monastery on a hill in Italy that looks like it's out of a James Bond film. It looks like the lair of Blofeld with his white cat. All that's missing are a few
cats.
Yeah, all that's missing there are a few nuclear missiles that he's kidnapped from some country. You know, it's absolutely insane. The guy is literally a James Bond villain. The guy spent all that money on that lair, and then the Italian government, when they realised that he was literally doing a boot camp to educate people so that they could overthrow their government and all the other governments around the world, because he wants a new world order. And by the way, these people who want a new world order, they all have one thing in common. They know how to tear it all down, and governments, they've no idea about what comes after that. They just hoping that something will emerge. They've no plans whatsoever. They're just sick of stuff and they want to wreck everything. So, yeah, that was it. And so the Italian government spent a year suing him, and he actually beat them. And then just at the 11th hour, when he thinks, oh, yeah, I'm doing all right here, that was when suddenly, here's the funny thing. When you start to hold interviews on CNN and other news channels from your weird monastery base that costs hundreds of millions of dollars, you might think that the tax service will have a look at you and go, oh, Mr. Bannon, your returns show that you've had this amount of money, and you've just bought that monastery on a hill that you were being interviewed with on TV. And they looked into his taxes, and then they arrested him for stealing all the money. So he's not that clever. He is a very intelligent guy, but it's funny what ego does,
isn't
it? But he's
been pardoned.
And now he's been pardoned.
It's okay.
And that says that sort of shit is absolutely fine. I mean, it is a repugnant pardon. Have there been worse ones? There's quite a lot of dodgy ones he's dished out. Yeah. But that one
record number of pardons by any president whatsoever.
Absolutely.
In the past 200 years.
But they're not to correct wrongs. Trump's pardons have never been to correct wrongs. They've been to repay people that have done him a dodgy favour.
There was a whisper around that he could buy a pardon for $2 million, but that's only a whisper.
Well, there you go. Whisper. Oh, I've got some news for you before we go on to the next thing.
Yeah.
Mark's saying Liverpool are losing 1-0. Is that football again invading this show?
That's
a serious news show.
That's chippy up.
Dear me. Well, the right wing are obviously watching everything. The alt-right, who really, really didn't want Trump to go and have fueled the election fraud hoax to the bitter end, and were right on board with the insurrection, and you know, they decided to wish Biden well.
He's not president of the United States anymore, and I can't stand that. I really am disappointed, but we're going to be okay. We're going to thank this president. Wow, what a sacrifice that he made, his family made, the amazing things that he accomplished, and he'll be back. But today we did hear from him for the last time as president.
A goodbye. We love you. We will be back in some form. So have a good life. We will see you soon. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Have a good life. All right. Now, he said back in some form. I think the president is going to watch and listen. He said he's going to do that, and he's going to evaluate his future, the country's future, perhaps. I know, but it was sad seeing him leave the White House for the last time on Marine One, on Air Force One. But folks, now it falls to us, and he's been very inspirational. We now have to fight cancel culture, each and every one of us. We, each and every one of us, have to stand up for our constitutional rights. How do you feel about Joe Biden? He is the president of the United States. It's okay, ladies and gentlemen, to say you do not wish the president success. It is. Now, I wish him no harm, of course, and I want him to be happy and healthy in his life, but I wish Joe Biden no success. I don't want him to re-enter the Paris Climate Accord. It's okay to say that. I don't want him stacking the Supreme Court as he pretty much said he would during the campaign. I don't want him to succeed at that. I don't want him re-entering any nuclear deal that was so flawed with the Iranians. I don't want to see that. So it's actually okay to say you don't want to see Joe Biden succeed. Remember, he is the head of the executive branch, okay? And we've got three branches. They are all co-equal. Fair enough? Fair enough. Joe Biden jumped the gun a little bit today. He got sworn in at 10 minutes to noon. I don't mean to nitpick, but does say noon according to the law. But anyway, here's a bit from today.
A cry for survival comes from planet itself. A cry that can't be any more desperate or any more clear. And now, a rise of political extremism, white supremacy, domestic terrorism, that we must confront and we will defeat.
I hate white supremacy. I hate domestic terrorism. But we've got bigger problems than that. All summer long, this country was on fire. But Joe, for his liberal base, focused on what happened 2 weeks ago. And they're going to, it looks like, exploit that. This is my neighborhood over the summertime. You see this nonsense? It was happening in cities all across the nation. And Joe Biden, at the age of, what is he, 78, is suddenly, after 50 years in Washington, D.C., going to tackle issues of institutional racism and white supremacy. Joe Biden, a man who never sees race.
The first sort of mainstream African American,
yeah,
who is articulate and bright and clean and a nice looking guy. I mean, that's a storybook, man. Yeah.
Joe Biden in his late 60s, marveling that there could be a bright, articulate, and clean African-American male. Something tells me that Joe Biden in his heart of hearts is not exactly woke.
They are fucking lunatics.
Clueless.
Lunatics. Just they are not well. There's something wrong in the head. And, you know, without, I hate to just rush into another video, but there are two parts to this. The wonderful story that you've just seen there, can I just say, those are the most rose-tinted glasses I've ever seen in my life, the way that he's looking at that. But it's nice to see him upset, though, I will say that. However, let's have a look at what Trump didn't deliver.
4 years, and one clear way to gauge a president's success or failure. Not simply whether they won re-election, but whether they left the country better than they found it. And by that measure, history will be brutal to President Trump. Because our country is more divided, more in debt, and less respected than it was before he took office. Let's look back at some of his inaugural promises to the American people.
We will bring back our jobs.
In fact, the unemployment rate in America is 2 points higher than it was when Trump took office, and that's after it spiked to over 14% after COVID-19 first hit.
We will get our people off of welfare and back to work.
There are more than twice as many people who filed for unemployment benefits than when he took office.
We will bring back our wealth.
In fairness, Wall Street has done very well under Trump, with the Dow Jones up 56%. But the national debt, which Trump promised to eliminate over 8 years, it surged by over $7 trillion. The deficit grew a stunning 429% on his watch.
We will build new roads and highways and bridges and airports and tunnels and railways all across our wonderful nation.
Unfortunately, no. Infrastructure Week never happened, with Trump storming away from a $2 trillion bipartisan deal.
We will make America safe again.
Hate crime incidents rose almost 20% from 2016 to 2019, the most recent figures available. Despite all the flag hugging, the percent of people saying they're proud to be an American plummeted over the Trump years. And when it comes to foreign policy, a 2020 Pew survey found that Trump is less trusted by people in 13 allied nations to do the right thing than the autocratic leaders of Russia and China. And one of the few areas where we can say America first on the world stage is in coronavirus cases and deaths. Now, for those folks who say that all of these numbers would look very different if it hadn't been for the pandemic, remember, Trump was deeply unpopular before COVID hit. In fact, his Gallup poll approval average of 41% is the lowest of any president on record. And none of that includes his two impeachments, or the more than 30,000 false or misleading claims, or the chaotic management style that led to a 91% turnover of senior White House staff, while having more than twice the number of people in his inner circle indicted than the last four presidents combined. Now Trump will be the first president since Andrew Johnson to refuse to attend his duly elected successor's inauguration. He's apparently recorded his own video farewell address where he'll tout his record. But we already have the First Lady's farewell address. It is full of true and worthwhile sentiments, but we thought it was missing some crucial context.
To focus on what unites us, to raise above what divides us, to always choose love over hatred, peace over violence, and others before yourself.
And that's your reality check.
I think that's such an important and interesting way to look at it. And yes, it is worth going back and looking at the promises made, promises kept. But when history writes about the Trump presidency, I think the first two lines are going to be the twice impeached president who oversaw the death of 400,000 Americans in his last year in office. And it's hard to get beyond that.
Absolutely. And also, the platitudes that any of the leaders or the First Lady speak are only soothing if you don't have videotape. If you have videotape or a memory of as long ago as 2 weeks, they don't make any sense in that context, actually.
Yeah, and if you just look at some of the numbers, they're historic. I mean, he leaves the presidency with the lowest approval rating after one term of any modern president. Melania Trump, and I do think it is worth noting, every First Lady in polling has left the White House with a positive net approval. She's leaving with a negative net approval. It just doesn't happen. They are leaving this in an historically poor position, and I think it will be reflected.
It seems like.
Yeah, and I'm glad they brought in Melania there, because she's an enabler. Everyone was going to save Melania and all the rest of it. Bollocks. She didn't give a shit. She's sleeping with an obese, horrendous bloke who's locking kids up in cages, and she's still... They had separate bedrooms. She's not been sleeping with him for... They've not had sex once in the White House, trust me. And at the end of the day, she's an enabler. She watched everything Trump did and just stood there and let it happen. She allowed... What sort of a woman would be okay with her husband bringing in policies that were separating kids from the parents? And there's still hundreds of kids that need reuniting that hopefully Biden will do something about. And we will hold him to account for this. And the thing you will get on this show, if Biden is a useless bloke, if he is shit at this job, we'll be going after him on this show, believe me.
But here's the question. All the votes he got, his record number of votes for Trump, his supporters, will they continue? There's talk of a new party, Mike.
Well,
a new Republican Party. Will it happen?
Well, he's lost Twitter.
The Patriot Party.
He's lost Twitter. Do you not think it was refreshing? Did you not think even before he left office, we had 4 or 5 days where wasn't it peaceful?
Yeah,
a little bit.
Every morning I was checking it. I was addicted to it.
I know, and it was so peaceful. So do you think that the supporters, without that to feed on, and
there'll be other ways. I mean, there just will be other ways.
Are they going to? So they're never ever going. They are never going to accept this Biden presidency.
I don't know. I mean, who knows? We don't know. But however, we've got a little video clip to finish the show on tonight, which sort of disheartens you, really. And it's from Channel 4, their news section. And you watch this and you think, there's no hope for us. And I think, is there any hope for the world? Because next week we're talking about Europe and the UK. These people here, I feel a bit sorry for them because they've been taken in like a cult.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you can only hope that things don't carry on down this and they have an epiphany moment. But I think I'd love to argue with you, but there's a bit of a nihilistic streak in me about it. I just don't see them snapping out of this. And but what a bummer to end the show on this. But we will be looking forward to seeing you next week in the post-Trump era.
So we'll see you next week. I'll finish on this video, which, I mean, just watch it and then make your own mind up. See you next week.
In Boone's Mill, Virginia, Bethlehem Road leads you directly here to a shrine where a supersized Donald Trump appears, Christ-like, on the front of this former church. It's now a place where his devotees demonstrate piety to their earthly messiah by buying up Chinese-made Trump merchandise.
There's a Trump train. Knife all aboard. It's an unusual painting of
the meteor as clowns.
As your cap says here, Trump still made president.
There you go.
the owner, Donald Whitey Taylor, had three meetings with Trump and insists business is booming, even as their president reluctantly leaves office.
He is the savior of the United States, but he's not God. Yeah. Yeah.
Why do you say he's the savior of the United States?
The liberals have gave it away. Obama's the worst thing that ever happened to America.
There's a bit of a cult around Trump.
Oh, sure. People love him. They admire him.
So there's almost a religious devotion to him.
I'd say it's just a cult. Yeah.
Donald Trump has taken advantage of this zealous devotion to stoke fear among his supporters about what Democrats might do now they're in charge.
No, we got to protect ourselves. We got to protect ourselves from the other side. Buy all the guns you can, get all the ammunition you can. If they start any crap, wipe them out.
There has, of course, already been violence. Five people died, including a police officer, during the storming of the U.S. Capitol, leading to Donald Trump's second impeachment. While the mob were united around a perceived election theft, the crowd was varied. Militia members mixed with QAnon conspiracists and off-duty law enforcement officers. Two of them were these Virginian cops who posed for a selfie inside the building, one giving the middle finger. The officers come from the small remote town of Rocky Mount and have now been charged with violent entry into the Capitol, which they both deny.
Tell me what, yeah.
One of them, Jacob Fracker, told me Capitol Police let them into the building and that they did nothing wrong.
You see officers moving the barricades and then just like, hey, come on. They're like, if you're coming, come on this way. It's safe this way, blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, fantastic.
The friend that you're with and you were pictured with is posting on Facebook, and you're posting on that Facebook page as well saying, we attack the government.
The we being a blanket statement, you know what I mean? We as people who just want to be heard, people who don't want to sit by and let, you know, tyrannical things happen.
We don't feel any responsibility for the bigger picture of what is now seen as an assault on American democracy.
No.
You didn't see any vandalism. You didn't see any of the attacks going on at all. Nothing.
Not that. No.
But it was going on all around.
It was, but not while we were there.
You felt that day that it was important because Donald Trump has supported the way you see America, right? Over the police, Second Amendment rights.
The military, national security, because, you know, I mean, he said it best. America first.